Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hunted Podcast with myself, AJ Cox. Next with me, as always, is Levi Mason. And then today, everybody should be a little excited. We got something, a little twist on here. We got two guys on here that decided to go through and jump on ship with us and everything. You've already heard them. We've had them on here before, but I don't know if they got hit in the head or if they've had too many beers and they said yes or what. But we got Chris Donovan and Brett Curry on here with us now. So there's going to be four of us out there. So if you know us, go through, get a hold of any of us now. We can go through and get you hooked up with what we got going on and all that stuff. And speaking of with everything we got going on, make sure you go through and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. On all those, you can go through and just type in the Honey Podcast. Or now we go through and we all got these little QR codes. You can go through, we can send them to you, you can check them out on our phones and everything, and it'll send you to our Spotify, our Apple, our YouTube, our all of our stuff, our social medias like that, and it'll, you can go through and enjoy us that way. And speaking of all this stuff, if you want to jump on board and help us out a little bit and buy a sweatshirt, t-shirt, or ball cap, I mean, they're guaranteed to make you look better than what you do now.
Guaranteed to make you shoot a booner.
Yes, absolutely. Whatever guarantee it's going to take to get you to go through and buy something, we will guarantee it. Just like Tommy Boy, when he's talking about, you know, I'll take a shit in a box and write guarantee on it. That's exactly what we're putting out here. Where are we at here? Yep, go ahead and get a hold of George at Red Beard Custom Engravings. He will get you hooked up and ready to go. He does a great job. Like I said, he does our hats and shirts and everything. Very happy to have him do all that stuff for us. And then we're going to jump into our part right now. We're going to go through and say thank you to first responders and military. We say this every single episode, and we truly do believe it 110% that this our world is crazy and everything as it is now, but it would be even more crazy if we didn't have our military out there doing what they're doing, and if we didn't have our first responders out there doing what they're doing and all that stuff. We do not have enough of these wonderful people out there that are doing it. It seems like it's kind of taking the back seat of one of the better jobs people want anymore, but we definitely, you know, the few that we have out there, we want to say thank you to them. And then we're going to go through and give our moment of silence here. It's our way of showing respect to those people that have made the ultimate sacrifice and everything. But before we go through and do that, if you want to, please go through and message us or email us. Or shoot, if you see one of us out and about, let us know. We would be more than happy to go through and give a shout out about, you know, what wonderful things this person did and everything like that. Or even if it's a branch of military or a certain department, fire department, ambulance service, anything like that, let us know. We would be more than happy again to go through and, you know, say thank you. So for right now, we're just going to give our moment of silence, like I was saying, for the people that have given the ultimate sacrifice. All right. So, like I said, we got two new guys on here. Well, not really new. They've been on here with us, but they're jumping on ship. So they got some big shoes to fill. I mean, I think me and Levi have been doing nothing but take this podcast straight to the top of our anthill that we're on right now. So, but with that being said, Brett, Chris, again, thanks for joining us on this. And we, thank you for joining the team, dude. Where I know I'm excited to have you guys on here. It's been nothing but great.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
The,
yeah, sure.
The I'm short time too. That we've been on there. So I think the first thing we're going to jump into is we all went down to the Illinois Deer Classic. We were down there with Lewis, and, dude, I don't know about you guys, but I talked to a lot of people down there.
Yeah, you did.
And yeah, you sure did.
Well, somebody had to, and right. Two other little kids kept disappearing. You know, they weren't coming back. And this
we're like salesmen. We were out and about.
Out and about, yeah. shaking hands. Yeah, and
person to person.
Dealing, yeah. But
probably getting the shocker collar put on me next year, ain't I?
Well, you're probably going to, like I said, when we get there, it's going to be like the little kid backpacks. We're going to make you wear that. So when leash. You get, when, yeah, yeah, with the leash, when you get too far, we can pull you back in. Yeah.
Make sure it retracts. So it comes back on.
But no, I think it was great. If by chance you're listening to this and you took a few seconds out of your day to come through and talk to us, man, we greatly appreciate it. I mean, we're really trying to I wouldn't say get out there and get up there, but I know that there's definitely people out there that are like us, and pretty much everybody we talk to would kind of raise their eyebrows when we're like, dude, you know, we literally sit in a garage, drink beer, and talk about killing shit.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
The turnout this year at the Classic was phenomenal.
It was awesome.
I mean,
it was a good show.
Yeah, really good. A lot of good stuff at the booths.
A lot of people there Saturday. I mean,
yeah.
It was. Yeah. I even went back Sunday and took my wife and kid. And I mean, there was still a good amount of people out
even
Sunday.
On Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, there was a bunch of people there on Sunday, too. Yeah. So it was packed up.
Great turnout.
Hell of a turnout.
That's awesome. Because that's the first time I've ever went, but I've been told that it's kind of not dying, but it wasn't as good as it used to be. But then this year it was
I think a lot
improving.
Lot of it had to do with our state and everybody wanting to be in here hunting and people losing the ground to outfitters. And I think that with the outfitter boost, it kind of took a toll on everybody wanting to go. So I think that's what hurt it at first, but I think it's back to good now.
Was there any outfitter booths even there?
There was that one guy from Texas.
Okay.
Yeah, it was more out-of-state outfitters.
Out-of-state stuff, yeah.
Not like it used to be where you're in Illinois and you're an Illinois outfitter at an Illinois show. It's
gotcha.
You're going to piss people off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, that's probably who that was. I don't know if you guys heard him, that dude with that elk call that just kept bugling all day long. I'm trying to talk to these people and be this and that, and all of a sudden just here in the corner, just screech, and I'm like, hold on, give me 1 second. I guess this guy needs to talk over me.
Well, then you had the taser going off.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah. What was that? Was that a knife guy?
Knife guy with the taser.
Yeah, he had a taser over there. But there most definitely was some pretty cool stuff there.
Yeah, there was a lot of good shit for sure.
Yeah.
But we went through there, and we were lucky enough that Lewis went through and, you know, said, hey, you dum-dums want to come help? And we said, absolutely. And we got down there. And
it was nice. I got to actually visit with him quite a bit. And I guess not knowing how important bow strings are to a bow, but not knowing as much as what I learned last weekend. Because that dude.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's next level shit, man. Yeah, I mean,
he knows his stuff.
Yeah, we're pretty much all don't know shit about bow strings. So you talk to that guy because he's good.
Mm-hmm. I did notice, though, there was a few people that they must have had an understanding about bow strings and stuff because they were talking back and forth, and I just shook my head up and down because I didn't know what they were talking about. But it seemed like they were very, very pleased with what Lewis was telling them, which, I mean, I think that's great. I know that he went through and made some very good contacts.
And then I just thought it was cool seeing – I know we talked about that at the outdoor show, but when he would talk about the zero peep rotation, just the look on people's faces that were like, really. Yeah.
And there was a couple, like you were saying, they were like kind of that in disbelief a little bit, but then like the more they talked and the more they, you know, we brought those bows down there and that other bows down there and people were looking into them and stuff, they were kind of, oh, shit, like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I had people that were telling me they had, you know, brand new bows. I had people that like, literally said they just got it and just did a couple shots through it. And they're like, dude, my string twist nonstop.
Well, I think that one dude said he had a brand new Matthews lift and it was twisting like crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had some people, the Matthews was for sure. And I think somebody else said a Hoyt and some other stuff like this. And it was, once they went through and figured that out, I'm really interested to see like kind of how putting the feelers out locally and stuff like this, because a lot of people too, when we said, you know, that Lewis is from Rushville, they were all, oh shit, so he's right around the corner.
Yeah, I had a buddy that stopped by that booth, and then he called me that night. He goes, hey man, he's like, after stopping at your guys' booth and talking to Lewis, he goes, I regret getting new strings not from him this year. He goes, just the way he knew stuff, he's like, I will be a customer.
That's awesome.
So that's sweet.
I think that's great. So, speaking of all this, I'm going to pass this down because I'm not going to be the one that goes through all the time and does all the talking with the sponsors and everything. So, if you're listening to this and it's a little rough, I apologize in advance. But if they start going off track a little bit, Papa AJ will come in and save the day. So, who's going to go first? Chris jumping in there. Perfect.
Yeah, I got it.
There we go.
All right, so back to our sponsors. Definitely like to give a big thanks to Rec Broadheads. Matt has definitely come through on us with those, and all of us have used them and definitely had huge success, and thank you very much for you being a part of us and getting a chance to represent these broadheads. And then number two would be the dominant strands, bowstrings. Like I said, got to hang out with Lewis last weekend, got to meet him and understand how everything works. Definitely got a more clear view of how important bowstrings are to a bow. And a funny story while I'm on this, real quick. So I bought two hats from Lewis, and my little girl, who's 5 years old, wanted to wear one of the hats to school on Monday. So I said, yeah. Well, I pick her up at my mother-in-law's, and she's crying. She said, Dad, your new hat, Dominant Strands hat, a kid stole it out of my backpack on the bus. And I said, you got to be kidding me. She said, no. So I said, do you know who it is? And she said, yes. And I said, well, did you give it to him or did he steal it? No, he's seen it, and I put it in my backpack. And then when I got to Grandma's, it was out of my backpack. He stole it from me. So they're hot item if you got a Dominant Strands hat. I mean,
that's what I kept telling everybody there.
Keep an eye on
guaranteed it. To make you look better.
So my daughter was tore up by it. And so just so happened, the teacher calls my wife the next day, said, hey, we got this mother calling. Their kid came home with this hat, wondered where he got it from. Yes, took it out of so-and-so's bag. Is this true? And yes, so I did get the hat back. But so if you got a Dominant Strands hat, keep a close eye on that son of a bitch.
Because it's going to go out real quick.
And then.
Oh. Man, we're missing all my stuff up here. All right, last one there for you.
All right, ECW Hunting Calls. I'd like to thank Jeff for sponsoring with those. And I honestly don't have I know a little bit about them, haven't used any yet, but definitely looking into it. I know AJ and Levi have for sure. So,
And we met him when he was down there.
Yeah, we went to his booth and actually talked to him for quite a while. So I'm definitely interested in getting into some of them calls. And I mean, they're all handcrafted, beautiful. Beautiful calls.
Yeah, and he said he had a heck of a – I think it was – yeah, we talked to him Saturday.
Dusk. Yeah,
Saturday. We were only down there one. And, I mean, he said that it was almost – he couldn't keep up. He said he had a couple pages full.
Yeah.
Made some good connections down there also. If you're just listening to this, you don't know this, but pretty much all – or not pretty much all, but a good chunk of our sponsors are veteran and everything, and that's what Jeff is. He's a veteran. And he actually went through and is doing something with if I say your last name wrong, Bill, I'm sorry. Bill Coomer, C-O-O-M-E-R. He does something that I think is pretty cool. He goes through and he runs this organization called Operation Veteran Outdoors. It's out of Missouri. We'll go through and put some stuff on our Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. So if you want to go through, he goes out and sends them out for goose hunting,
snow goose
and all that stuff. And man, I'll tell you what, dude, he was
Bill was a character.
Yeah, you could tell he was a good old boy, man. Oh, yeah. He sat there and he blew on them calls left and right and everything, and they sounded good. And shit, what did he tell us? He said he's been doing this since he was like 12,
since he was 13.
13. And I asked him about how old he was, and he said, well, I'm over 80. And I was like, oh, man. So that man's been out there doing that for a long time. And it seems like a great thing because, like I said, if you go through and you check them out, he's on Facebook and everything like that. So if you look up Operation Veteran Outdoors, he goes through, like we were saying, he goes, takes them out on snow goose hunts. It looks like they've did some pheasant hunts, some duck hunts, and a whole bunch of other things like that. And he flat out told us, that people aren't giving as much as they used to, which is very kind of common with talking to people. But he told us that he doesn't care. That if it's down to his last dollar and it's what it needs to be, he's taking these veterans out to go through and do this. So he has not a sponsor or anything like that. We just met him down there with Jeff, and I mean, he was absolutely a character. So we just wanted to do our little part and tell him thanks for entertaining us for a few minutes there.
Yeah, he was awesome.
So, all right, and then another thing, I want to try to focus maybe this one on a little bit more because I know once we all get to talking and everything, we kind of go left and go right, upside down and backwards. But I think I want to go through and maybe talk about turkey season's right around the corner. So kind of techniques and tactics and kind of what to look for and everything like that, kind of like season by season. So, you know, we got youth season here coming in a couple of weeks. Levi and I were talking before Chris and Brett got here and said the weather looks
decent
and everything like that, but it looks last year's youth season sucked too, right?
Yeah.
It snowed that one day.
Yeah, and then it was 2 years ago. It was bad.
Yeah.
So I'm going to open this up. So what are you looking for, I guess, this early for like a youth season? Like, what are you looking for to get out there and get a youth out there? Because, I mean, you're not really going to be doing so much moving around and things like that, are you? Or are you going to try to get them more to come to you? I mean, what do you think, like, their thought process or what you can kind of get them to do? Because they're not quite
– they haven't split up
quite that's, yet. That's when they're still –
they're
yeah,
still
yeah.
haremed up. And
I think it's more like deer hunting them, you know.
Pattern them.
Yeah, just trying to figure out what fields they're going to and you know, not worrying so much about calling them from a long ways away, but being where they want to be at. And
yeah,
do your homework, like Chris said. Just like deer hunting, just kind of
and it's,
do it, be where they want to be.
With everything greened up so quick this year, you know, usually it's like them first green fields, you know, them turkeys just love them. But this year, I mean, everything is greened up so much compared to a normal year that, I mean, it might make it a little tougher. But
and I've known all of you guys have taken youth hunters out and stuff. Have you kind of came up with maybe a little tactic to where it's easier to go through and deal with this with a youth hunter as opposed to when you're going by yourself? You know, if it's me and one of you guys going, I mean, we're picking up. If we need to, we pick up. We're shitting. We're getting. But, I mean, if you're going through and you're getting a youth hunter, I mean, are you kind of taking on maybe how the youth hunter is? Or if it's kind of like, you know, we're going to sit and wait no matter what?
It's kind of on their skill level, I guess.
Okay.
You know, and they get a little more skill with their age and feel a little more comfortable out there. But I think my most success has really come from, like these guys have said, is trying to get in pretty much in the fields closest to the roost. And if you can get right there on those field edges close to the roost, it seems like they've been very, very receptive to calling, especially big groups of toms. Like, I don't know how many times I've taken youth hunters out and you're calling in multiple toms. I mean, you're getting 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 toms to come in all at once.
When you say getting close, about how close is close?
I like to try to get in there a couple days ahead of season. If I know right where they're roosted, they've stayed there for a few days and pop that blind up within 100 yards of them and get in there early.
Mm-hmm. And then I know we've talked about all this stuff before, but I mean, you're definitely looking for a good decoy, right?
Oh yeah,
I mean, and so
running a hen and Jake, yep. And hell, okay. Even throwing a strutter out there. I mean, they're kind of setting the pecking order right now, so
okay.
it's a good time to have Jakes and strutters out.
Okay, and then, I guess, I mean, because we all know kids are move around, they get finicky, and they get doing this and that. Are you trying to tuck yourself in something pretty good, or are you just doing a pop up blind? Are you back against a tree?
Been in closed blinds, pop up blinds, just. Some, I mean, it's like Levi said, you know, it depends on the skill level of the kid, how much they've been out. But if you got a kid that can't sit still that long, then, you know, blinds are definitely the way to go because you can get away with murdering them,
right.
You know. So, and then if they start getting bored, you know, they can play on a phone or do this or that until the birds come. But you know how it is if you're sitting out in the open and next thing you know, birds pop
boom,
up
right
and they're not making no noise and you got birds there and then they're spooked. But and then last couple years been doing the setup with the Bog Death Grip tripod.
Oh yep.
And those things are awesome, man. I mean, it's for a young kid, it makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 30 so years old much. And I use one.
I didn't buy the Bog, but I bought something similar like that for my wife with the 350 Legend. And like you're saying, it's awesome. And you just take it up there. I set it on one of my old tripods for my cameras and crank that sucker down, and it sits right there.
I had the one that didn't have the vice grip system. And then I used it a couple times. I'm like, that's nice, but I want something where it's just sitting there, so like, you know, because I got the 350 Legend, and after a while, you know, holding it up, it gets a little heavy. Yeah. And same with turkeys hunting, you know, you could have a bird coming in 60-70 yards and you're just holding there, your arms like, okay, you know,
yeah,
starting to get a little fatigued. But like you say, you take a youth out there, put that baby in, that vice grip, and all they got to do is put their shoulder, lean their head in, and it's nice and easy for them.
We've been taking, we take kids out to shoot, you know, before we hunt, we've been putting them in the bog, and it takes, as long as you're holding onto that tripod and that thing's locked in there, it takes so much kick out of the gun, so they're not scared about, you know, getting their ass whipped when they shoot that gun, so... And then when it does come time to shoot a bird, you know, and they pull the trigger, they're not sitting there flinching and worrying about what, you know, how bad that gun's going to kick. So that's, that I think is huge if you're blind hunting with a kid. So
I just had something else too, completely frozen my brain. But yeah, I know the bog things are good to go through and do that. So when you're going through and you're setting up your decoys for something like this, are you doing it, like, are you putting your feeder pretty close? Are you putting your tom out of way? What are you trying to do now to kind of – because, I mean, I'm assuming with the youth, you're not, you know, going to try to have them rip one off at 30, 40 yards.
No.
You know, you're wanting to get them, what?
Up close, probably.
20?
15, 20.
And these birds aren't decoy shy this early in the season. So
no.
You put those birds or those decoys at 20 yards, I mean, they're going to kill
them. They're coming right in.
20 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, if I put a hen and a – if I do a hen and do a Jake, I'll usually put them close, and then I might – if the birds are coming from behind me and hen Jake closer and then put a strutter out further, that's usually how I set it up early. It seems to work fairly decent, so –
Dude, so are they coming more for, like, that Jake and stuff this early then for youth? Or
I just always worry about, you know, sometimes them strutters will mess them up, them bigger strutters,
right.
You know, so I always put them out a little bit further and then keep the Jake and the hen closer. So that way, thinking if you – I mean, that's saying you think you know where they're coming from. That it don't always work that
way, right.
But, you know. But that's normally how we set up youth season. And like Levi said, I mean, those birds are not decoy shy at all early, so –
When you're putting up the your tom, are you putting it kind of like in your line to within like the 15, 20 yards or something, but maybe to your right more, so in case if they do come through and they do want to come mess with that tom, they're not like really bowing way out or anything?
So yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I think that's good because I know that we go through and we start talking decoying and doing this and doing that and stuff. Sometimes we kind of take for granted but I want to go through and try to break this down pretty dumb proof to where if somebody, you know, they're going through and they're listening to this to where it's, this is how we're setting them up, X, Y, to Z, distance and all that stuff. So when you go through, are you putting, so if we're saying we're looking straight out to, are you putting your decoys more kind of to your right? So then their focus and everything is more away from you, or are you kind of putting them directly out in front of you?
I guess it all depends on where you're set up at, but on the most part, I normally, if I can, if with a youth kid, like you got your main shooting window out the front, so where they're, and I usually sit behind them, and so I usually just try to put everything straight out in front of me, and then use that strutter, the big strutter, I'll kind of put it as a blocker to, like, if they come in. And then if I think they're going to come in from this way and they see that strutter, they're like, oh, man, I don't really want to go over there. And it just kind of pushes them back into the straight in front of the blind. You know what I mean?
Okay, so you almost put that strutter more like straight out into your left?
Yeah, straight out to the left, straight out to the right, whatever, to kind of make them be like, I don't know if I want to go out and mess with him. We'll cut over, and then they see that Jake, and they're like, okay.
I can beat him up.
Yeah, yeah, I can take his ass.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, perfect. I've kind of noticed, too, you know, you got your right-handed and left-handed shooters.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a blind, you know, some of them young kids, it's a right-hand shooter, they can't swing left so hard. Mm-hmm. So you'll keep, like Chris said, keep them kind of straight out, but don't have a decoy straight hard to the right or right to hard to the left, because, like I said, they can't swing. Now, you get an advanced kid that can switch left to right, you know, and act on the fly. But, yeah.
So, but yeah, even sitting in that chair with a bog, you know, with your gun in a bog, I mean, a kid's only going to get so much movement out of that thing before you have to move their chair, you know, one direction or the other, which is usually not a big deal because it seems like early, once they lock on them decoys, you can do anything and get away with it. I mean, so.
Mm-hmm. And then getting to blinds, I'm sure we've all seen them. You've seen those, what are they, 270-degree blinds and all that stuff anymore?
That's what we use, the Primo's Double Bull 270s.
Well, this is the one that I'm looking at because I guess not all of us have money like some people. Looking at those. Those.
I will say on those, 2 years ago, Presley's ran a hell of a sale on them, and we got them for – they were cheap. I mean, believe it or not.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why we bought several of them.
I went – my neighbor actually went through and got one of those. What is it, Tide Y? Is that how they say it or whatever?
Tide Y.
Dude, you go through and you keep an eye out, dude. You can get those for about $100, $120.
They run some good deals over there.
Some real good deals. And I love the idea of – because I know we've all been caught into that tooth where you're trying to peek out that little window, little window and this and that, and you can't see worth a shit. But, dude, I love that open – be able to see all that stuff. I think that'd be good for the kids too, so they're not as finicky. They can move around and do this and do that. Do you guys brush your blinds in at all?
Not for turkey.
No, not for turkey.
With turkey, if it ain't moving, you're good.
Okay. That's
what was that? How many years ago? Cade was young. We just set it out in the middle of that field and they came right up to it. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. They don't care.
All right. So there's youth season. So let's roll into our time. Do we getting out there and start doing first season and all that stuff? Are your tactics kind of sort of the same? Are you changing up a little bit yet?
Pretty similar.
Okay.
Now that I don't have a youth hunter, I'm running and gunning a little more.
Right.
Usually they're starting to gobble pretty hard if you got decent weather. Slip in on them 75 to 100 yards on the roost and you can usually kill them within about the first 5-10 minutes.
When you say the weather's getting better, what, I guess, would be your kind of ideal weather, like what you're looking for? Calmer days, good, brisk, windy day, cold, warm, hotter than balls.
High pressure, clear mornings.
Yeah, 30-35 degrees. Seems like they talk a lot, 30-35 degrees, no wind, bluebird. You know, warms up into the, 60-65. I mean, that's pretty ideal first season day.
Yeah, for sure.
And then are you also doing the same thing with checking fields and all that stuff, trying to see where they're going? Are they still pretty much on their habits and all that stuff?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're starting to split up a little more. That's when you kind of start finding a single bird here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll still run into some that are grouped up a little bit, but they're still on pretty much that same pattern going out to the fields after they fly down.
And then getting back to the single bird, do you guys want to explain what you're talking about when you say a single bird? I mean, I know.
Easy picking.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is the kind of the thought process on why you want to maybe go for this single bird.
Well, and your tactics change a little bit too when you go after that single bird.
Mm-hmm.
He's been beat up on a little bit, or maybe he's been, pushed into your farm from another area because he's been beat up on. So first season, I'm still, and I'm sure these guys will agree, I'm running a hen and a Jake, possibly even a strutter still, but for sure a hen and a Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And putting them in a, pretty close breeding position. Now, if I'm going after that single bird, I know he's been beat up on. There's a reason why he's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running a single hen, maybe even two hens.
Mm-hmm.
He's safe.
It's just kind of...
He feels comfortable.
Kind of that guy that sitting there after when the bar's closing, waiting for everybody to go through and get picked what they want to get picked, and he's
getting the leftovers.
He's getting the yeah. So that's great, great. And then what if there's not that single bird? I think we kind of covered this, but I think I jumped off of it a little bit. Are you going to go more for your Jake and your hen and kind of the same setup as it was for youth? And I'm saying. Let me refresh that. So getting that set up for when you are running and gunning, like, is that what you're going to go through and try to do? Or are you going to, call a little bit more, try to get their attention and maybe put one bird out by himself? Or are you going to put them both out, all three? I mean, what makes you, I guess, decide on what you're going to do?
I guess it's kind of like decoy and deer. It all depends on the temperament of the birds.
Right.
And it might, if you get into those situations where you're in a big group of birds, there's a lot of toms, there's a lot of hens,
mm-hmm.
a lot of competition there. It might take you a few days to kill those birds just to kind of feel them out a little bit, okay. Get their temperature, see what they're like and what they're not like. And a few years ago, I had a hunt in the timber down this bottom timber, and I knew there was a few toms in there. But the goblin wasn't real good, and I just slipped down in there one morning, and oh my God, that morning, the whole freaking bottom was just full of birds gobbling. And I was just patient. I sat there and, you know, I think we talked about this on one of the other episodes of mimicking that boss hen and getting her pissed off. That's what I did. And I got right in there amongst them, and I ended up calling that whole freaking flock in, over 30 birds in that flock. I don't know how many strutters, 8, 10, 12 strutters, somewhere in there, and ended up killing what I thought was one of the biggest ones. But, you know, it may take a few days to figure them out.
Right. And what are you, when you say to figure them out, what are you looking for?
How they're responding. If, you know, if they're all flying down and going right out to the fields with all the hens, are they breaking off? Are any of them interested in you? You know, you're kind of testing the waters, I guess, with them, you know, what they're liking and what they're not liking, what they're doing.
Okay.
And then once they come in the field every morning, they're not coming into decoys, where they're going after that, to where maybe the next day, instead of setting up here, I'll go to where they're going after they get, they hit the ground, you know, maybe I'll try to catch them on that, you know, that next journey from coming out of the roost. So we've done that before too, and it's worked out okay.
And then you'll have days too where, you know, you've watched them do the same thing for 2 days and you're like, I got them the next morning. And then they do the complete.
Right, yeah.
That's what I was about to say. Don't get discouraged when you think you've got them figured out. And then it's like, okay, they just went down to the bottom. I'm up top.
But if you get out there and you're doing your scouting beforehand and everything before your season starts and all that stuff, and you see that, like Chris was saying, that they are pitching out and they're going to this way, and then you're watching them and they're out there for maybe, you know, an hour, 2 hours, something like this, but then that might be where they're pitching down, but then they're coming back in this way, you might want to go through and instead of maybe getting them where they're pitching out, more of where they're going to be coming back to you.
You could, because, you know, they always pitch out, do their thing right out of the gate, and then they'll always go somewhere else and then end up strutting forever. And it might not be that far away, but so, yeah, we've tried to do two setups, one for right when they come out and then another one for once they come out, hit, and then when they go to their, like, their, I guess, secondary strutting spot after they come out of the roost. So, and, you know, then again, you know, so the morning that you're like, okay, they're coming out, they're not looking at our decoys, every morning they're going down that secondary spot, and that's where they start strutting, they hang out. You're like, we're just going to sit up there tomorrow morning. Will you sit up there tomorrow morning? They're going to stay up in that top spot and never come down.
Right.
You know.
Right, right. You know, but we're just talking about perfect case scenarios.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they are coming back in and you know that's where they're going to go through to they're heading at, are you even putting a decoy or anything out, or are you just letting them come to you?
No, I put decoys out. Okay. And I don't know about Levi and Brett, but I do call more first season early than I do later. Like later in the season, if I can get a bird sparked and they answer, I pretty much shut up. Yeah. And until, I mean, if they gobble or a hen starts talking back and wants to, you know, do a hen battle, I don't even call anymore. I just let everything go down. That's a lot of times late seasons when they come in and they're not saying a word, they just show up, you know, gobble at 50 yards away and you're like, oh shit, you know, he's right there, you know? So, but early I do call a lot more than I do later.
And the hens seem to be more vocal early. You have a lot more hen competition, so I feel like I have to call more. I have to get louder to get their attention.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. I mean, kind of everything's about start kicking off and everybody's, I guess, trying to come up with a pecking order.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of deal and things like that. Okay. Brett, you got anything to add on this one?
Not really on this one, nope. Man, they've got her all.
Got her all licked and everything. Yeah. All right. So then let's roll to second season. I mean, now we're a few weeks away and would be from youth season, everything like this. Weather's getting a tad bit better and all things like that.
Everything's starting to green, starting to green up. The
foliage is coming, and that's getting close to when they're – I mean, that's the breeding time. That's when –
Turkey rut is getting
– Yeah,
the turkey rut.
Yeah.
You're about at the peak of the gobble.
Yeah. So are you hitting out more with a Tom? You throwing out maybe a Jake or two instead? Or what's your, kind of your thoughts with that?
Maybe a Jake on a breeder hen and leaving the strutter out. Just Jake breeder hen or a maybe a breeder hen with a Jake on top of it and then a feeding hen out there.
Okay.
But – I don't know. I feel like everybody's decoyed these turkeys so much anymore. I feel like them strutters anymore, at that time of year can really mess your hunt up.
Okay.
Like, they come in, they're like, I don't know, you know.
Right.
And there's times they'll come out and beat the shit out of them.
Well, right, yeah.
It's 50-50 shot. I mean, I'm weird. You guys already know that. But when I do, like, my decoys, I, like, paint a picture in my mind. I'm like, okay, I've got my hen here,
mm-hmm.
my Jake mounting the hen. I want it to look like, maybe if I do have a strutter out, that he is just now showing up and that he's seeing what. So now that other Tom that sees the strutter in the distance is like, well, I got to get to her and him before he does.
Before he does. Makes sense.
I mean, yep. I take it as like a competition. Like, I do the same thing with like deer hunting. Even when I'm rattling in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they're fighting. Now they're stopping. Now they're fighting. So I'm like playing it in my mind like mm-hmm. a video. And then that's how I'm rattling. So right. I do the same thing for turkey hunting. With my decoy setup, I paint a picture.
Well, and I've noticed too, depending on where you're at, you know, and who your neighbors are, and you know how hard that, I guess they pressure their birds, mm-hmm. but that kind of dictates too on, you know, what I'm doing decoy setup wise. Like, I know areas that I've got a little bit more hunting pressure around me. I've come to find out over the years that less is more.
Yeah,
you know, I'll run that single hen, and if I'm hunting a first season, you know, about some pressured first season birds,
mm-hmm.
I'm running a single hen.
Which is one of those things, like when you were saying earlier about seeing what they're doing and watching and yep. trying to get everything all figured out.
Yep.
So it sounds like it's a bunch already of scouting, watching what you're doing when you're already out there trying to get, and, I guess, the playbook figured out.
And the more experience you get over the years of doing it, the more you'll have them figured out, just from the sense of, okay, you know, I've seen 20 years of this, or I've seen 30 years of this, you know, this is how they react 99% of the time to this and 99% of the time to that. And
mm-hmm. and hunting the same property for a lot of years, yeah. you know, that's so huge. Like, you know, you got your historical roost on every property. You've watched some birds come in out, do this every year. And that, to me, turkey hunting and being fortunate enough to hunt the same property year after year after year
mm-hmm.
is huge, because then you can also, you know, every square inch of the property, you can use the terrain to maybe get yourself closer, you understand the place. But you know, like, it, you know, I've been to Missouri before and been other places hunting, turkey hunting, and it makes it tougher when you don't know where you're at.
Right.
Oh, yeah. How can I get here? How can I do this? You know, can I sneak this? You just don't know because you've never been there.
Right.
Yep. Oh.
So, all right, well, before we go into week 3, we have some more sponsors we're going to go through and do here. So, again, bear with us as we get through this one.
We would like to thank Corey with Wild Oak Whitetails Buck Lure. Give Corey a like and follow on social media. Check him out. Corey's great. He hooks us up with deer urine every year.
Fresh deer urine.
Fresh too. Deer urine. One doe, one bottle. So we appreciate Corey. He's been with us pretty much since the beginning,
yep.
and he does a great job. Also want to thank Evan with Morath Welding. Just saw Evan the other day out in the country welding on some farm equipment. Evan does a great job. If there's anything you need, be sure to give him a call. Like and follow on social media with him also. He's on there. So then we also want to thank Mike with Hex.
Mm-hmm.
We've been wearing Hex for, well, about a year now.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things we've pulled off with Hex is, you know,
it's incredible.
With deer and turkeys both. I mean, it's just blowing our minds. So, yeah.
I even know down at the Deer Classic, me and Levi, when we start telling our stories, man, it we always bring up Hex, and there's a lot of people that look at us and they're like, "Yeah, never heard of it," or "I've heard about it." Dude, it's
like you try it, you'll be a believer.
My goodness, it absolutely.
I know when Dad first tried it, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, right after it first come out. You mm-hmm. know, I was giving him shit all the time for putting his voodoo suit on, but it literally is a voodoo suit.
Yeah,
you can get away with murder with it. So
yes, well, I mean, essentially, that's what we're doing. Yeah, exactly. So, perfect. Wonderful. All right. So, let's jump into third season then. Everything's greening up a little bit more. You know, you guys are saying the breeding and all that's kind of picking up and going through. Do you guys think things are slowing down a little bit now, kind of like after the, you know, the major part of the rut with deer go through, or is it all still kind of the same?
I think it's a little weather dependent.
Okay.
I've seen third seasons that are just fire. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen third seasons that are just shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
like bad.
Yeah, it can go both ways. I mean, you can have Burgess hammering their heads off everywhere, responding to every call you make. And then you can, you know, last, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years, third season's kind of been shit where you, I mean, you'll put 50 miles on your truck just to find a bird to gobble. So, farm equipment's moving around and, you know, they're working ground and planting and sprayers are running.
Mm-hmm.
Mushroomers are coming out a little bit.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Pushing some birds around. So it can be hit or miss, but I mean, it can still be really, really good.
Right. But still going through basic tactics, trying to get out there, see where they're roosting, find them in the morning, go through, figure out, like you were saying, seeing what they're doing.
Kind of trying to keep tabs on them all day, you know, get out there. You know, if you've filled your second season tag already, or if you don't have second season, just kind of carrying that scouting over into third season. And usually you can kill him first morning of third season if you've done your scouting right.
Right.
And, you know, roosting them in the evening. And, you know, if you got time midday to do a little driving around and find out where they're hanging out through the day.
So that's kind of almost your major door knocking time a little bit?
For the most part, you might have to do a little road tripping.
Right, which I think is just as fun. Well, I want to say just as fun. It's exciting, but it pisses me off at the same time because I almost think it's every time me and you go somewhere, you're like, dude, I had permission there before and this and that, and then bastards haven't came out, and then we drive by, you know, and there's four of them sitting out there. And
that's why you can never have – my wife gives me shit about this all the time. She's like, Jesus Christ, we got enough places to turkey hunt. No, you can never have enough places to turkey hunt because there's a bird willing to work somewhere. You just got to find him.
Just got to find him, which I think is a very, very good point too. Going back to like that lone burn and everything is if you go through and you find, I mean, it just takes one, man. You don't need 10 of them to come in. You just need that one.
And it can happen quick. I mean, it might be 10 minutes, you know, from getting out of the truck and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I feel like. That third season to me is when you start getting to that, you know, they pretty much, that's they don't gobble in the morning for shit because they don't want all the other gobblers to know where they're at. They're not giving up location. And then they pitch out. The hens ain't talking for shit. They go do their thing. The third season is when those late mornings get really good. Mm-hmm, like okay. After 10 o'clock when they're finally off that hen and they're back out searching. So I feel like that 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock on starting, you know, that third season area is a great time to hunt.
So there's a lot of competition right there between in that time frame between the, you know, each hen and each tom. You know, mm-hmm. Like Chris said, you know, the toms aren't giving their location away because more than likely they're roosted with one or two hens.
Mm-hmm.
And them hens ain't talking because they're not giving their location away to that, you know, to any other tom. You know, mm-hmm. They're pretty happy with what they got, pretty content, and that's how they plan to keep it until they're done breeding.
Pretty much like our wives, I mean.
More than happy, just beyond happy. Every day I'm sure they wake up and they're like, we are some lucky SOBs right
that's
here.
My wife whispers everywhere she goes, I don't want anybody to hear me and give up your location.
So doing later mornings, are you setting up anything any different for that at all? For your third season stuff like this, or are you just kind of playing the waiting game? Are you moving, like you said, driving around more, and then you're just going out setting up? I mean, since they are being a little bit more tight-lipped,
you're kind of checking their temperature again.
Okay,
you know, on how hot they are, how well they're responding. But I think pretty much the same thing, same rule of thumb with the, even the decoy strategy. Like I'm to the point now where I'm definitely just running one hen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Like you might find a bird that you can get away with a Jake and he still wants to fight, but yeah, that one hen's killer at third season.
A hen or going into the reaping.
Yeah.
That was going to be something else I was going to ask too. Because I mean, after they went through and getting quiet and this and that, are they going to be a little bit more protective of their women? Are they going to want to, I know you said going out with a hen, but if you go through and you start pulling that reaper out, are they going to want to? It'll, fight a little bit more, or are they just trying to, is it like a territorial?
Like you said, the temperature of the bird, yeah.
So, okay. So where were we at? Third season? Anything else to add on third season then? I know you said everything's greening up and everything. Are you trying to tuck a little bit more underneath maybe some greenery?
Hide a little better because, I mean, like we said at this point, they're depends on where you're at. They're kind of getting pressured, so the less movement, the better. You don't want to be out in the open. So I always try to tuck myself in, you know, if you got another guy with your two guys, maybe, you know, don't sit right next to it would be like a giant so blob much
on like so much kind of, on a field edge or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, so like
guy back a
have
little
a guy
bit.
Back 5-10 yards behind you, maybe mm-hmm. you know,
keep the sun at your back, stay in the shadows.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
it makes maybe. It a little bit easier if you want to. Try to get them tighter on the roost, you know, once all that green starts coming on, you know, okay. it makes that a little bit easier better to do high, that, yep. too.
And it starts to maybe a turkey hunter that doesn't have a lot of experience with that foliage starting to get on the trees. If you don't have the experience or don't know your farm super, super well, like early in the season when a bird gobbles, I mean, you can damn near pinpoint what limb he's sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. As the foliage starts getting on, that little bit of, I guess, noise canceling. Oh, you know, or noise reduction, you know, from the leaves and all mm-hmm. the foliage and stuff starting to come on. So now you're starting to get a little bit of that. They're getting to be a little bit harder to pinpoint exactly where they are. You know, with that and with the wind, you know, take that in consideration too when you're roosting at night, you know, which way is that wind blowing? You know, stuff like that. He might be, you know, 50 to 100 yards west of where you thought he was last night just because of certain factors that you didn't take into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they start roosting in all kinds of weird places. Oh, it's like wherever they end up at, they're like, oh, shit, you know, it's going to have to work for the night. But, yeah. like Levi's just saying, I had a bird last year that, man, I got in. I waited till they start gobbling. I got in on this bird, and I thought I was set up as good as possible. And I'm like, man, I know I can get just a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
I can get just a little bit tighter. And as soon as he comes out in this corner, I'm going to be right there. I moved. I owl-hooted a little bit. No response. Moved a little bit. Owl-hooted. He finally gobbled. I'm like, man, he's all the way down in that ravine. I can get all the way to the field edge and set up there. I got to the field edge and got set up. And it's starting to lighten up a little bit. And I'm kind of getting up, trying to look down over to see if I see him in the roost. I was like 30 yards away from him.
No shit.
I blew him right out of the roost. Yeah, hunt done. But it sounded like he was a lot further away. It was my bad, but got too tight.
And it seems like third season, you know, you're talking about birds roosting in crazy places, you know, because they're really starting to get split up with everything going on, the breeding going on, farm equipment, all that shit. And I've noticed, too, a lot of times my birds will stay out and literally strut in the fields. Like, I'll get up on a bluff and watch them. And I'll watch them strut out on the freaking field until it's almost pitch black. And then finally they're like, oh, shit, got to go to roost, and then take off running. And they might just go roost in a freaking tree line.
Right.
Yeah, wherever they can get into a tree at.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't care.
Hmm. Okay. So now we're rolling in fourth season. Are we – it sounds like they're getting a little bit more timid, or a little more sporadic and things like that. Are you – changing anything at all?
This is when you start seeing places that you might have struggled early season finding any birds that just didn't really have too many birds, that next thing you know, you got random birds starting to show up at different areas.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, like we talked about earlier, having that single bird, mm-hmm. that one lone gobbler by itself, fourth and fifth season, that happens a lot. And that if you can get them to talk and you can locate them, that's huge.
Is it almost to where like the breeding and everything is over except for like maybe a couple skagglers?
Like I feel
or
like
something.
I mean, I don't know about you guys. I feel like fourth season it's peaking out and starting to go down, and then, you know, depending on the year, but I feel like especially by middle of fourth season that a lot of it's done and they're starting to really search, you know, because there's not many hens left to get bred.
Okay, so
the,
yeah.
And a lot of those hens have been bred are going off, you know, at 9-10 o'clock, and they're already searching for nest spots. And you know, depending on the year, like Chris said, they might have been bred super early, like clear back at the end of March, mm-hmm. and they're already sitting on nests.
Mm.
So that's another thing to take into consideration.
So it's almost like there's even because like in my place, like I got hens out the yin yang out there. So like fourth and fifth might be almost better for me because they're going to be the hens are going to be more kind of I guess locked down, and the dim toms might be looking for a girlfriend still.
Yeah, your place is hard just because it's kind of tight quarters with the timber, I've noticed. And I don't think that flock has been established a long time, so they all know everybody.
Right.
I mean, those are hard birds to hunt.
Yeah. That's like my place. It's got the hens, and then fourth, fifth season, it just all the birds start coming back. That's I have my best luck fourth and fifth season.
Mm-hmm.
First and second, I'll hunt it. but I just know it's more of a scouting hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I know I might be burning money buying tags, but it's like, if you're not out there, you don't know. So
yeah, your birds are one property over early.
Yeah, always.
For sure.
But it's funny because I've been thinking about this the whole time we've been talking in the back of my minds, because I know you two like the later season. But it seems like everything you guys are telling me, the peak this is running, and then all of a sudden we're getting about four season, and it's kind of starting to fiddle down and slow down and everything. But you guys love fourth and fifth season.
That's my
it's peaking down because all the hens have been bred, but the gobblers ain't done yet. So they're definitely out and about looking. That's why they show up on all kinds of weird places. You know, they're property to property. Like, man, there's got to be one more hen that hasn't got bred. So they're looking more. They're not saying they won't talk as much, because there's days that they will. But, I mean, for the most part, they ain't gobbling near as much as they are early, especially on the roost in the mornings. Like,
oh yeah,
a lot of times you'll sit there and, you know, on the roost they won't make a noise, and it's not till they hit the ground and get going, and then they'll start gobbling, you know, after they get on the ground. But out of the roost, they hardly ever say anything.
So are you trying to scout even more then, because they're not really giving their location so much? Or I guess I shouldn't say scout. Well, scouting's, I guess, the right word. Are you showing up and then trying to see, hear something more instead, and wait, and then play off of that, and then move yourself to where you think they're going, instead of so much like where you've scouted before, their pattern's been coming in and out, and you're sitting up before the sun's even up?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, unless I've got one that's hot,
right,
I'll move in on him early. But like Chris said, with the goblin, it even makes it hard to set up on one early, just for the simple fact of, they ain't even talking much at night.
No, you can't get – I mean, you can't get them to do anything.
Yeah, you might have 3 or 4 days where you don't hear a gobble trying to roost at night, and then, you know, you might go back the next day, and then you might have 3 or 4 talking.
Mm-hmm.
So it just – it's – you got to be out there scouting no matter what, because, I mean, every single day is different.
Right.
And that, you know, that fourth and fifth season, if you have the opportunity, if you got a lot of ground to hunt where you can – run a gun, if you can't get something sparked up, me and Brett have done a million times. We'll stay
a million, for, a million times,
well, a million,
maybe,
and a half.
Maybe not a million, but
probably more.
Than a million for sure. But you know, give a farm 30, 40 minutes, try to get a bird sparked up. If you can't, we'll go back to the truck, move to the next one. Can't get nothing going there, we go to the next one. Just keep jumping. Until you try to, you know, at least till you get a bird to gobble back at you. Hell, there's been mornings we've jumped 5 farms and couldn't even get a gobble.
And that's what's good about me and Chris is that there's fairly close, our farm. So we can hit one, hit the other. And it's like, well,
start
we're
back over
here. Let's just go here. And then we'll just a big circle. And
there's been mornings we've hit them all and then came right back and started over again.
Gotcha.
The exact same farm
there's
started.
There's been times where we've, like Chris said, done it, started over, and then the farm – say the third farm we hit, we went back the rotation, bam, turkey goblin. So it's like, okay, where was he?
Gotcha. Perfect. Great. So you're up. This is the one last one before we go through and talking to fifth season.
All right. Well, another big thank you to Nature Made Jewelry.
Jewelry.
Tough word. That's with Levi and his wife. They make some beautiful products, so be sure to go check them out. National Land Realty. Again, go to their social medias, give them a look. Backwoods Premium Wildlife Products. Great food plots. You know, it's getting that time of year where you're going to be wanting putting in that food for either turkey or deer. So, again, go give them a look. You won't regret it, I promise. And McKee Automotive. Look up Dustin. Anything you need, be sure to get a hold of him.
And Dustin went through, and he was on one of our on one of our podcasts earlier, and he enjoyed it so much. He reached out and he's like, "Hey man, how do I need to be a sponsor?" And I said, "You open that checkbook, buddy. That's how you do that." No, Dustin went through, and I mean, he gave us a little bit here and there and whatever, but he goes through, and I mean, he turns wrenches all day and this and that, and it's not just, you know, your basic auto stuff. I mean, if you need something. Shoot, I know. I think he's actually going through right now and working on a golf cart for my parents for them out the lake. So, I mean, if you got anything with a motor in it and some wheels, you go through and get a hold of Dustin. I mean, I know you guys really don't know him, so I'll speak on his behalf. He's a super good dude, but, I mean, he goes through. If you're in our area, man, you'll see him. He's got some, Jesus God, it's got like a I don't know, like a 15-inch lift on it with green rims and green lights, and it's white. And I mean, you can see that sucker coming from about 2 miles away. But, I mean, Dustin, dude, he loves doing that stuff, lighting, everything like this. He's got, I mean, so if you need anything, he can do anything from your basic oil changes to if all of a sudden you want to put every light and whistle in there and make it beat to music or turn purple, green, red, you know, anything like that, he can absolutely do it. So make sure you go and check him out.
So you're saying we should get a hunted podcast?
I was just mobile. Thinking that.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying no.
Have a traveling studio,
but I will say this: if I went through and got hooked up with Dustin, I did my part. Sounds like you guys need to get the mobile and get the stuff for it.
We need a short bus and paint it.
The short bus, yeah, and a short bus would be perfect for us.
I was thinking of Winnebago.
Actually, one of my buddies, one of my close friends, D Main. He's like, dude, I think I'm selling a short bus. He's like, I bought it to do stuff with, and we got one.
Yeah, we go.
We got one.
We'd go through, and we should just get together one week for turkey hunting, and we just fucking drive around town, yep. Stop, get some coffee, get something to eat, keep going from farm to farm.
Oh, man, we should do it. We definitely all need to try to get out and go together this year.
Fill that sucker up with dead birds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dude, I don't know if we could all go together, though, because, I mean, could we sit together for that long, though?
Oh, yeah. Me and Chris can do it.
I think so.
Yeah, okay, you and Chris can do it, but then you're adding Levi, and then you're adding me.
I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about you.
I don't – no, you know, we don't – I'll tell you like I tell my wife. You don't worry about me. I got me under control.
I will say, whenever me and Chris get together on a hunt, it's pretty epic most of the time. We might not kill a bird, but it's awesome.
Something happens. We've had a lot of great hunts together for sure.
I think all
four of us could pull it off. I really do. No doubt about it.
We were talking on the way here. I was like, it'd be so much fun, just all four of us get together and do it. And
absolutely. Man, I'm down like a clown, man. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't care if I'm hunting, sitting there running the camera, mm-hmm. sitting there for sightseeing, looking at other, you know, cardinals and blue jays. I don't mm-hmm. care. As long as I'm out there, I'm having a good time.
Could you see all four of us stuck in a blind together?
We're not doing a blind.
I mean, it
would. As long as we all went out, ate Mexican and drank.
Exactly, and had a bunch. Yeah, and everything like this. Dude, we probably wouldn't kill shit. We farting and shitting and burping.
We have to have a designated pee corner.
That is true. We'll just bring in a designated pee bottle.
Someone doesn't have to flood the tent, though.
Yeah. I had Curry and Ted, my boy, out youth hunting, and Curry had to piss. Well, there was turkeys all over the field. I'm like, dude, you ain't getting out of this tent. We're in the dead middle of the field, and, you know, it's youth season. I'm not going to mess up my boy's hunt. And all of a sudden, I hear him in the corner going, I look back, and I'm like, you all right? He's like, oh, man, it's bad, dude. I got to go so bad. And I said, just piss in the tent, man. And he's like, oh, I can't. I got a shy bladder. And so my boy.
Hold on. If you got to piss so bad, you're like, oh, it hurts. Like, there's no way.
No, it got to the point where I thought he was going to pass out. Like,
I was hunched over and sweating.
So Kate, my boy's like, Dad, just let him get out and take a piss. I said, I'm not screwing. Dude, there's gobblers all over the field. I'm not screwing this hunt up. So next thing you know, Curry's like, I'm doing it, dude. And all of a sudden, Niagara Falls come out and – we didn't take no chairs that day, so we're all on our knees in the tent. Oh, yeah. Floated the whole tent out. So, you know, by the time we got our hunting clothes, our pants had piss all over them. And, yeah.
Good cover set.
Yeah, so you end up going home and the wife, what in the absolute shit?
And never killed a bird that morning either.
Now, when I said, we either kill a bird or something epic happens, I wasn't kidding.
It's all about killing birds. Sounds right? Like you need a diaper.
Yeah.
Bring some Depends.
He wears them now.
Yeah.
So. Nice. Okay. Let's focus back up like we always do. Okay. We're getting into fifth season now. So, your guys' favorite season, I went through and got fifth season for me and my wife. Matter of fact, Lewis just got a hold of me today. He went through and got fifth season, so he's coming up this way too.
I think everybody has fifth season that we pretty much know except for me.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, sometimes it sucks like, to suck, my friend.
That's all right. I'll be tagged out with three birds.
You know what? You would too, you cocksucker. You would be done. Man, I'm done. Well, what day? Oh, I don't know. It's the first day of third season. I've already killed three birds.
Looks like you're hanging with me and Chris then this
week. I can do it.
Looks like you're going to be sitting there holding a Brett's piss bottle then.
I don't know. I might be too shy for you to hold it.
Okay, so fifth season, we're getting in here.
birds been beat up. They're still kind of sort of still looking for girlfriends. They're getting a little bit more quieter. Okay, what tactics are you doing to bring it home at the end of the year?
The kitchen sink,
running gun, give them all. Yeah,
a lot of sneaking around.
Yeah,
are you getting? Are you just kind of saying throw it all in? We're balls of the wall chasing after them.
Fifth season, I've noticed I can get some birds to gobble pretty good on the roost in the evenings to locate them. But, you know, kind of going back like what we talked about third season, dude, they're in some weird freaking places. Yeah. Like, I've killed a couple birds fifth season that are on farms that are just nothing but draws.
Or how about a branch over a road next to your house?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had birds roosting over the freaking road right past my house.
Yeah. We were driving by one day and he's like, Dad said there was one. Oh, shit. There it is. I mean, just.
And it was like 7:45 mm-hmm. in the morning and he's still sitting on the freaking roost right above the road.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
So you're just kind of, again, going back to the just scouting your tail off as much as you can, trying to figure out where they're coming from, where they're going for.
Yep.
And then by far using terrain foliage and. You see birds out in the field, you can get up on them pretty easy at that point.
Yeah, a lot of sneaking.
I'm
at that time, I'm kind of backing out of some of the areas. The grass starts to get really, really tall by fifth season. Yep. So a lot of those areas that they went and strutted in, you know, first through maybe third, fourth,
mm-hmm.
are getting tall enough now to, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of my birds don't like taller grass, especially in the mornings when it's dewy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hate it.
Yep.
So avoid those fields like the plague, you know, just for the simple fact of it's tall, predators, and then they don't like getting in that shit and getting wet.
So are you looking for more of maybe a cornfield or a bean field or something like that?
Yeah. Maybe a short pasture.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, anything like that. And then, like I said, you know, and then, again, I feel like late mornings on even fifth season, I feel like those you're going to get more gobbling out of them birds and be able to locate them just as good or better than.
Are you sleeping in a little bit more at this time? Because this is these last couple seasons you said.
I'll be honest with you. There is a lot of times that we don't even go out till 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Yep.
That's like last year, that fifth season. Went and hunted the one farm I know we talked about last podcast. I hate to bring it up again, but it's like we were just talking about. You know, you go out, you check a farm, nothing, and then what, it take me 10 minutes and I shot that one. It's just it's that later in the morning where they got off the roost or started to kind of do what they want to do, and then, you know, just happen to be coming through. And I'll run some cell cameras through turkey season too, just kind of if I don't have time to go out there and scout them,
right.
At least I've got three other eyes out there kind of knowing where they're at.
Yeah, I went and threw a couple out just because I knew where they basically come from, go to, and everything like that. And I guess I haven't been out there because I have those out there, but I need to get out there anyway. But I think that's a good thing, too, is people – I know we've talked about this before, is to where people think trail cameras are straight for deer. But, I mean, you go out there
– oh, man, they're huge for turkeys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, get them all figured out, and especially in the mornings. This time it's when it's cold and it's you're just not wanting to go out there and everything, get out there.
And I've noticed, too, this time of the year, you know, everybody's burning.
Yep.
I don't know what it is, but I've noticed if I've burned – and then I'll put a trail camera on it, and then turkeys will come in there and start pecking because that's fresh dirt. And
they love that.
Yep.
So anything more for fifth season?
I've noticed with fifth season a lot of times I've had a lot of good luck ahead of a thunderstorm in the mornings. Like if we got, you know, storms supposed to be rolling in, you know, like 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that, dude, those freaking birds are just hammering right ahead of that storm. And usually you can kill them about right off the roost in fifth season ahead of a thunderstorm.
Is it usually just fifth season, or is it almost any time during any of the season?
It's good pretty much any of the seasons, but I don't know. It seems like those fifth season birds, if they're not vocal ahead of that thunderstorm, they will be vocal.
It just kind of wakes them up a little bit, gets them moving.
I don't know what it is, man, but it changes the temperature of them, I've noticed, especially on the farms that, you know, these birds have been pushed out. And one of my last hunts in fifth season was I killed a bird on a farm that is literally nothing but draws. You drive by this farm and you're like, there ain't a freaking turkey ever been on this place since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go in and start checking it fourth and fifth season, and you might have three, four birds, five birds even, I've heard in there, light up throughout this whole thing, and it's just nothing but long, narrow draws here and there with a couple big roost trees in it.
Yep.
And you can slide right in there and just kill them like that.
Nice. It's awesome.
And it's right by a freaking highway, too. Right by a major highway.
It's so weird. So anything else to add for these, for any of the seasons, anything like that, that you experts would like to put in?
Do your homework. Scout. Almost scout more than you hunt, almost.
Yeah, right. I would say. Absolutely.
Right.
If you don't, you know, put in the time, you're not going to be successful in the
season.
Yeah,
that's the thing about it. I mean, yes, you can – not saying you're not going to go out and – well, just like Levi last year, sat down and within 5 minutes, the bird flew out of the roost and landed right in his lap. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like deer hunting. I mean, the more ass time you put in, the better chance you got. And,
yeah.
Right.
And then knowing your property, that's, I think, is a huge part of any hunting. But, you know, knowing the terrain and how to get around and shit like that. But
blend yourself in. Don't, you know, when the foliage is up and starting to green up, don't go sit on a naked tree. Because then you're just going to sit out like a blob.
Right.
So, you know, tuck yourself in, get yourself camoed, and slight movement, them things can see.
Very absolutely.
Good. So just, like, do your homework, blend in, and be successful, and hit them.
Gotcha. Anything from you, Levi?
I think them guys pretty well got it covered.
Gotcha. So then the last thing, maybe probably the funnest part, so are we going to do this better, what? With the tutu.
Oh, yeah.
Are we doing this?
Oh, we're good.
No, we're going to have to now.
We're too deep into talking.
Too deep into it, all right?
I mean,
all right, so we need to come up with some guidelines. What are we doing for guidelines here? Are we going for that one poor bastard that doesn't kill, but what if all of us kill? Then are we going to go, I mean.
We all wear a tutu.
Okay, so.
I just want
to
wear it.
I was going to say, the purpose is to go through to not want to wear it, not. We'll buy you your own.
How about if we all kill?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this for turkey, right?
Yep.
And then
and then we're going to do it for deer.
Let's do it.
Well, Well, no, we're not doing deer. I'm not wearing a tutu all year round. No, we're not doing that.
So let's do this. Let's do beard measurement and spur measurement.
There you go.
And then add those together. And then
if everybody kills.
Hey, I got fat birds, so I want to throw a weight in here, too.
Yeah, we can do that.
And then I'm going with, well, what if you kill two and I kill one and Brett kills three?
Then you're all wearing tutu but me.
Then
whoever's got the biggest total, I guess.
Just the biggest total is awesome.
Yeah, we'll just go by. You could kill three and have one just scrawny little bird.
All right. Man, I can't wait to go with you guys because I'm going to fucking yell every single time. Dude, I'm gonna go out. Danielle's going to kill a bird. I'm going to tell you bastards that it was me. Well, and then I'm going to go with you guys.
You're going to stuff some lead in his ass.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm doing. Dude, I'm going to get out there, and every time this bird comes in, just cough in the background.
Start coyote yipping.
Exactly, dude. You're never going to have a bird. All right, perfect.
You see it right when the kid gets ready to shoot. Next thing you know, AJ's going to be ripping the gun. Give me that gun.
Exactly. I ain't wearing this fucking tutu. Good. Little motivation.
Yeah,
little bragging rights. But, yeah, no, I think we're going to go through. We'll do that. And then.
So we'll post the measurements and the total on social media.
Put that out there, and then the loser has to wear it for what? One hunt? Two hunts?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's definitely one. I mean,
so we're doing the camo tutu then, right? Because I still want to be incognito.
I'm getting that bright pink one, buddy.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's got to be pink for sure.
Yeah.
This ain't going to be the same camo.
Yeah, no, it's you got to be pretty.
All right. We're not going to eat or nothing, are we?
We'll see.
All right. Well, it looks like I'm hunting a turkey.
You know what's going to happen, though, is we're going to go, right?
No one's going to kill one.
And oh, my God, yeah. What if nobody kills one?
Then I guess we're all wearing them then.
So what's going to happen is whoever's going to go through, and we'll just say me because I suck, and I'm going to go through and wear this fucking tutu, right? And I'm going to go out, and I'm going to be like, piss on this. I'm picking the shittiest day for deer hunting. Because I'm not going to kill a freaking deer when this tutu, because I'm just not going to do it. It's just not going to happen. And I'm going to go out there, calling it right now, 210.
210?
210. Go big, go home. I'm going to go through, shoot a 210, and then you know what's going to be in the back of my mind the rest of my life? Dude, I got to wear this fucking
tutu.
Got to
wear a tutu every time.
Every single time I go now.
If you shoot that 210 with the tutu on.
Mm-hmm. That's what the 210 tutu.
Yeah, the 210 tutu. Yeah, that's a tongue twister. Worse than jewelry. You got to keep it on the social media too. You got to have that tutu in hand or tutu on with the deer in hand.
Nope, absolutely. All right, well, perfect. I've been waiting to meet.
So you're telling me I need to hit multiple states for turkey season?
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Michigan, right. Missouri, Nebraska.
I'm in.
Who's in?
Yeah. I'm in.
be one of those things. I think I'm doing pretty good. Hey, man, you know, he had an inch and an eighth. He was wearing, you know, he had a good, like, you know, 12-inch beard, happy this and this. And Levi just comes in. Oh, you did? Well, I killed nine.
Yeah. Here we go.
So, all right, perfect. Well, I'm glad we got that all squared away. Hopefully, everybody, when you listen to this, you got something out of this. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do, is educate you guys sometimes. Usually we're in here to, you know, have a good time. But if we get on this good time thing, if you've listened to any of our past episodes, it's almost too much sometimes. We don't get out any of the good information. We get some beers, get some stories and all that good stuff, but that's what we enjoy. And we hope you enjoy that too. So if you guys don't have anything else, I'm going to cut this one off.
Oh, we're good.
Good, yeah.
Awesome. Well, one more time, thanks, Brett. Thanks, Chris, for joining the team. We hope you guys know what you got into, but it's too late now. Ship's already taken off. You're on board.
Thank you, guys, man. Yeah. I appreciate the hell out of it.
I'm excited, and I'm ready for this journey to take off.
Me too. So, all right, well, we appreciate you guys for listening. If you haven't listened to our other podcasts, make sure you go listen to those. One more time, go follow us on social medias. Go through and follow our sponsors and find them and let them know that you found them through us. We greatly appreciate it, and we will catch you on the next one.